WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest, Gerald Early, is the editor of the new book, The Sammy Davis Jr. Reader. It's an anthology of essays from the 50s till now. Early wrote the introductory essay. Early is also the author of The Culture of Bruising, Essays on Prize-Fighting Literature and Modern American Culture, and he's the editor of the Muhammad Ali Reader. He's been a contributor to Fresh Air. He's a professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Gerald Early also wrote the liner notes for the Sammy Davis box set, Yes, I Can. Here's the title track.
Yes, I can. Suddenly, yes, I can. Gee, I'm afraid to go on has turned into yes, I can. Take a look, what do you see? 133 pounds of confidence in me. Got the feeling I can do anything. Yes, I can. Something that sings in my blood is telling me yes, I can. I was just born today, I can go all the way, yes, I can.
As you point out, during part of the 50s and 60s, Sammy Davis was one of the best-known African-Americans in America. In the entertainment world, he was seen as representing two opposite extremes. Some people saw him as representing the civil rights movement and the strides that African Americans were making in breaking into, you know, the mainstream entertainment world, but other people saw him as an Uncle Tom. Can we talk about those two contradictory visions of Sammy Davis? Let's start with him representing the civil rights movement.
Well, it's interesting about Davis and the civil rights movement. He won the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP in the late 60s. Which is one of the highest awards you can get, civil rights awards you can get, which was given to him because of all the work he had done for the civil rights movement and all the money he had raised. He did have an association with the civil rights movement that was quite visible and quite important, and he certainly got written up a lot for it when he was in the black press. Davis was also a guy that a lot of people thought was a sellout. One, I think it had to do with his personality and his striving to be so sincere with people, which I think a lot of people thought was just sort of obsequious and distasteful a lot of times. Part of it, I think, had related to his size. He was a very small man, and I think his size made him seem more overwhelmed by people around him than he might really have been. I think his physical size tended to make people in some ways kind of disrespect him in combination with the personality that he had. Then he always seemed like he was someone who wanted to be around white people. And his conversion to Judaism in the late 1950s, the marriage to My Brit in 1960, were all things that made people think, oh, this is a guy who he's a white wannabe. And so what's interesting about that is the kind of life that he was striving for, as he made clear in his autobiography, Yes, I Can, was actually the life that Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement was supposedly fighting for. A black person can live this kind of life, and a black person can marry whoever he wants and can associate with whomever he wants and can live the kind of life that he wants, and he doesn't have to live a life that's confined by his race. So in that respect, he was kind of making his life a rather daring public statement. But it was precisely the sort of thing that people didn't like. Not only a lot of black people didn't like it, but there were even white people who were rather uncomfortable with the way he chose to live his life and the kind of personality that he projected.
You write, part of what made Sammy Davis interesting to the American public was that he was so publicly desperate as a Negro. What do you mean?
If you read Yes, I Can, I mean, here's a guy who so much wants, first of all, he's tremendously self-conscious about being black. I mean, on the one hand, Sammy Davis wants to kind of present himself as someone who is very comfortable with being black. But on the other hand, it's very clear from the way he acted that he, in many respects, he was very uncomfortable being black. I mean, he was very uncomfortable in some respects, but his whole physical appearance, being black is something he talked about a great deal. And he also talked a great deal in his books about being ugly. And
being short, having a broken nose.
I mean, he thought he was an ugly man. And one would rather expect that with the kind of performer that he was and that he was a dancer and so forth, that he would be very aware of himself as a physical specimen. And being black was part of that as well. So I think it all kind of merged together in his mind in many respects. But he came along at a time when black performers were trying to break out of the confined sort of black entertainment world and cross over. I mean, cross over in a way that was different from, let's say, the way Louis Armstrong crossed over and to get a wide audience, or Fats Waller crossed over and get a wide audience. I mean, Davis emerged after World War II with a cohort of people like Portier, Eartha Kitt, Dorothy Dandridge, Lena Horne. I mean, he emerged with that cohort of people, essentially. And their crossing over was meant to be something different than what the earlier generation. And I think Davis's crossing over was very much an idea that he wanted to blend in, and he wanted to bring certain kind of distinctive elements of himself as a Negro, but he wanted to make sure that those elements were pleasing to a white audience, that they didn't really disturb or bother a white audience. And I think that the pressures under which he operated in order to do what he did produced a certain kind of desperation in him. I mean, if you read his books, the tone of how he often described what he was about, he sounds very much like a man who's rather desperate.
My guest is Gerald Early, editor of the new anthology, The Sammy Davis Jr. Reader. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Gerald Early is the editor of the new anthology, The Sammy Davis Jr. Reader. Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin used to mock Sammy Davis in performance. They'd mock him for being black and for having converted to Judaism. Of course, Sinatra and Martin would mock each other for being Italians, but somehow it seemed more cutting with Sammy Davis. Here's a track recorded live at the Sands in 1963. Sammy Davis is doing some of his impressions, and Sinatra and Martin are in the background putting him down.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, this song was written for the man. And not too many people sing it. We'd like to have you meet a few people singing the song. We'd like to offer some impersonations, if we may.
Oh, good idea, Sam.
Well, why don't you get forward there, get on your horse, and get the hell out of here.
The Yiddish are coming.
Well, I love you, and don't you forget.
And I love booze, and don't you.
I'm telling you, boy, you guys have a ball because you ain't got many rights left. I would like...
So's your old man.
Have you meet, first of all, Mr. Nat King Cole.
Was a merry old soul. And the merry old soul was Nat King Cole. Better keep smiling, Sam, so everybody knows where you are.
I tell you guys, if we ever get in the lead, you two are going to be first.
No, we ain't, because we're going to join you in Africa.
I ain't going to Africa, baby.
I can't go there.
I can't go there.
I joined about 11 years ago.
Nat King Cole.
Was a merry old
son. Oh, shut up. You silly goose. When somebody loves you, it's no good unless she loves you all the way.
You notice how much better he does his own people than our people?
That's the Rat Pack, recorded at the Sands in 1963. My guest, Gerald Early, is the editor of the new book, The Sammy Davis Jr. Reader. He wrote the opening essay. Gerald Early, how does that sound to you now?
I think it's uncomfortable to listen to it. I would think, actually, at the time when Davis was even going through it, it was rather uncomfortable for him.
In reading all that you read to put together the Sammy Davis Reader, do you feel like you understand any more now what motivations Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin had when they were ridiculing Sammy Davis Jr. during performances? Was it just like good-natured stuff, or do you think that there were more hostile things going on beneath the surface.
I think they both liked Sammy Davis, and they probably both thought they were being funny, and, you know, they were all kind of high when they were up there anyway. And so, they, you know, when you're high, you're apt to say things that are kind of silly. You have an integrated act at a time when things are kind of racially charged. They're thinking that maybe if we tell jokes like this, it kind of eases, it kind of makes the audience more willing to accept the fact that we're an integrated act. And, you know, it kind of relaxes whatever tensions there might be in the audience because, you know, the audience is probably mostly white. And so, you know, and Sinatra was a liberal guy. He was a guy who, you know, Davis got him to do some civil rights benefits and so forth. And so, you know, I don't think, you know, he's probably trying to be in any way intentionally racist. On the other hand, I think there are other things that are probably going on in their minds at this particular time and what's going on racially in the United States at this particular time. And in some ways, for them to be doing the kind of jokes that they're doing and having Davis as the kind of, as a butt of certain kind of jokes is perhaps releasing certain tensions for them as well as releasing certain tensions for the audience.
Well, Gerald Early, I'd like to end by asking you to choose one of your favorite Sammy Davis Jr. recordings, a recording that you think shows him at his best. What would you like to play?
Well, I think the best album he made was the record he made with Count Basie that was arranged by Quincy Jones, and just about any track on that record would be fine because I think he was at the top of his game when he made that record.
Gerald Early, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Did you say I've got a lot to learn? Well, don't think I'm trying not to learn, since this is the perfect spot to learn. Teach me tonight, starting with the ABC of it, right down to the XYZ of it. Help me solve the mystery of it. Come on and teach me tonight. The sky is a blackboard.
Gerald Early is the editor of the new anthology, The Sammy Davis Jr. Reader. Early is a professor of modern letters at Washington University in St. Louis.